Good morning, and welcome to our final day of the October term held here at Black Hills State University. The court would like to welcome students from the university, Faith High School, Lee Deadwood High School, Little Wound High School, Crazy Horse High School, Wall High School, and Western Dakota Technical Institute. In the lobby, we have several publications available. The tan-covered booklet is a synopsis of each of the nine cases we are holding oral argument on this term. It tells you a little bit about the cases, and it also tells you a little bit about us and how the court operates. Our oral arguments are now carried live on the internet and are also archived. And when the decisions of these cases are issued by this court at a later date, they're issued in writing, and they are also posted on the internet. And if you want to find out how the cases you hear orally argued this morning are decided, on the back cover is the site for our webpage, and when the decisions are issued, they will be posted on that webpage. The second publication we have is a blue publication and explains how the trial courts and the appellate courts work in South Dakota in a narrative manner. And the third publication, a green covered one, is a pictorial history of the South Dakota Supreme Court. If you have not had an opportunity to help yourselves, please do so during a break or as you leave, and they are free for the asking. The first case on oral argument this morning is Alex Andrushenko et al. Appellants versus Ivan Solchuk et al. Appellees. For the appellants, Mr. Rollins, Samp, attorney from Sioux Falls. And for the appellee Solchuk is Mr. William Gary, attorney from Sioux Falls. For the appellee Metzger Construction is Mr. Roy Wise, an attorney from Aberdeen. And for the appellee M&M Plumbing is Mr. Mark O'Leary, an attorney from Sioux Falls. Now, I understand, Mr. Gary, you'll go first for the appellees. You'll speak for 10 minutes.
That's correct.
And then Mr. Wise for 5 minutes.
That's correct.
And then Mr. O'Leary for 5 minutes. Okay. Very well. Mr. Samp, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you. Mr. Chief Justice, Justices, may it please the court. First, I want to commend the students that are here today in such a large gathering of faculty. I think that if you follow the process all the way through, we'll find out in South Dakota that justice does work. This case is before you because of a question of duty by three defendants toward my three-year-old client who was scalded by hot water in a jacuzzi tub. The facts are well documented for this court, but on behalf of Dennis Andrushenkov, we would assert the trial court failed to go far enough in weighing the duty of defendants assumed toward Dennis and then properly applying the law. The trial court essentially said Dennis was a licensee and no duty other than that required toward a licensee need to be shown. Under South Dakota law, we argue specific duty exists requiring a host to provide for its invitees ordinary and reasonable care for their safety, and the host is liable for a breach of that duty. In the case cited by the appellees, Munch versus HD Electric Cooperative, I think that there was a lack of emphasis on...
Excuse me. For the benefit of some of the students who may not have looked at the brochure yet, could you just cover a basic synopsis of the facts?
Surely.
To give them the background of what happened here?
Absolutely, I'd be happy to. Dennis is a three-year-old, and his parents, the Andrushenkovs, were invited to the Silchuks for lunch in an afternoon. And Dennis was, I guess what you might call a terrific three-year-old. He was into a lot of mischief prior to lunch and after lunch. Dennis was to go upstairs and play with the other children. There were three families having lunch, and there were a total of, I believe, 9 children involved, ranging from 11 down to 5 months old. And at some point, Dennis broke away from the group at a time that we argue that Mrs. Silchuk had the last opportunity to see him on the second floor playing alone. Dennis got into the bathroom area where there was a jacuzzi, turned on the hot water and was scalded, and ended up having plastic surgery for being scalded. The question that came that has really never been answered directly by this court in the way that this case comes to the court is a question of duty. Did Silchek owe any duty toward Dennis? Did the plumber who installed the two hot water heaters owe a duty toward Dennis? And did the contractor who ordered the hot water heaters and were accommodating the Silchek's demand that they wanted plenty of hot water, was there a duty to them? Now, the house was a newer house. It was only been occupied for about 7 months prior to the incident. So we're dealing with basically new construction or newer construction and a fairly present set of facts. One of the issues that was a bit troublesome is whether or not if someone's an invitee under our law, is there a duty to that invitee to at least reasonable care? And if the Silchek's claim that Andrushenkov's were not guests, then we believe a jury should decide who said what to whom and what caused the Andrushenkov's to be in the Silchek residence. We know that modern case law has trended away from what defendants argue is the American standard of one of reasonable care. And we think particularly toward infants and minors in South Dakota that the duty toward reasonable care should be the standard that we would argue.
Do you think this duty of reasonable care is heightened because your client's only 3 years old versus, say, if they invited me over for lunch?
Absolutely, Judge. And we believe that the South Dakota tends to give a higher duty toward children in all circumstances. And as I'll get a little further in my argument, that duty wouldn't rise but for the acts of Mrs. Silchek. But the way the facts come together in this case, we believe that the duty toward that child does rise. We believe that the duty here is not only one of reasonable care toward a minor, varying from the American standard that's been part of the South Dakota court holdings in the past, but also we think that there's a duty to protect when there's a gratuitously assumed duty of care. And you said that in State Auto Insurance Company versus BMC. Now, whether or not the Silchek's assumed a gratuitous duty, that's clearly for a jury and not for the trial court to decide.
But didn't Dennis's mother testify that she felt that she did have the continuing duty to supervise her little boy during the time that they were at the Andrushenkov's?
Yes, Your Honor, and I answer that a couple ways. One, my client, she didn't clearly answer that she had a duty, but that she was responsible for him. She didn't, and as the transcript shows, my client is a fairly recent immigrant, under a deposition by a skilled trial lawyer. Not really, as you go through the transcript, she's asking the question to be repeated a number of times as to, you know, what the translation is. But the parent here is not shirking the duty, and I understand where the justice is coming from. But we think that if you take the case of Zwick versus Zylstra, which I think is a dispositive case here, there's a clear question of whether the Silchek's assumed a gratuitous duty.
Was that a parent case? I mean, what I'm getting at here is, you know, your client's mother says, you know, I recognize it was my responsibility to supervise my 3-year-old, and are we going to be conflicting with established law that, you know, the parent has the responsibility and the obligation to care for their children? If we adopt this principle you're saying, you know, that someone else can assume that responsibility, are we going to create havoc in the, in, in, with rights of parents to say, no, it's my decision about how my child is going to be supervised. It's not the host's responsibility to care for my child.
Your Honor, and that would be the conventional law, provided we did put the other facts in the case that were ignored by the trial court. And those facts have to do with Mrs. Silchek and what she did. Keep in mind, the parents are on one level, as the children are on a second level, playing. My clients are assuming that Dennis is playing with the older children. Now, that wouldn't be enough to get us here. But if we take the other facts that were not considered by the trial court, I would suggest that the court would want to take a closer look at how this gratuitous duty is applied. And if I could just quickly recite what those facts are. First of all, Dennis had turned on two faucets on the downstairs before dinner and flooded the bathroom.
And his parents knew that, too. I mean, it wasn't right. Just the host that knew it.
That's true.
Okay.
Didn't the mother deny that?
Pardon?
Didn't the mother deny that?
The mother did deny that, so that's a fact in question.
Okay. Going back.
I'm not sure she understood the whole question, but yes, on the record, she denied it.
Right. And aside from that, and going back to the duty of the Silcheks, there's no question but that the mother of the child and the father of the child have a duty to watch over the child. But assuming there's a judgment in favor of Dennis against the Silcheks, they're entitled to contribution over and against the parents, aren't they, if they failed in their duty? In other words, it's
That's correct.
A joint tortfeasor case where if they pay the judgment, they're entitled to contribution from the parents. But that doesn't excuse, if there's a duty, that doesn't excuse the duty of the homeowners to be careful of what happens in their home.
That's exactly right, and I think there's separate action, or there's separate cause of action between Dennis being injured and whatever claim they might have against the parents for contributory negligence, as I read the pleadings.
And now, are you suing the parents? As counsel for Dennis, are you suing his parents as well as the host?
One of the parents is a party. There's a guardianship.
Right, but they're representing Dennis as a guardian ad litem.
As a guardian ad litem, that's correct.
But I'm asking you, is Dennis suing his parents?
Could Dennis sue his parents?
No, I'm asking, is he suing his parents? He's not suing his parents. He's just suing the hosts. Is that right? Okay.
But there's no claim by the Silcheks for contribution on the no. part of the negligence of the parents at this stage.
Not at this stage.
Okay.
Given the fact that Dennis is 3 years old at the time of the accident, and probably it wouldn't have gotten you very far to say, Dennis, please stay away from the jacuzzi, you could get burned. I don't assume a three-year-old comprehends that. What specifically should the hosts have done as far as their duty to avoid what happened?
Well, first of all, she was upstairs 20 minutes with the children when the other parents were downstairs. During the time that she was upstairs for those 20 minutes, she saw Dennis playing alone, away from the other children. Now, there are children old enough to at least supervise a three-year-old and come down and say, Dennis is in the bathroom or whatever. But she didn't, when Mrs. Silcheck came back downstairs 20 minutes later, she did not tell my client that Dennis was playing alone. So we had a three-year-old playing alone upstairs. She didn't tell him. She didn't say, go get Dennis and bring him down. He's likely to get into trouble because he's not playing with the other children. It's that set of facts that are in our briefs that we think the trial court overlooked, where Mrs. Silcheck took a gratuitous duty at that point to provide at least a reasonable standard of care for Dennis. And the question for the jury is, you know, was that a reasonable standard of care to just ignore the fact that he was alone, away from the rest of the kids, that she was the last person to see him, she had 20 minutes with him, she obviously had concerns, about what Dennis might do or might not do. And it's on that basis that we think that she didn't tell him to go play with the other children. She admits that in her deposition. She didn't tell the Andruschenkovs that he was playing alone. And she didn't ask the Andruschenkovs to bring Dennis downstairs with the rest of the adults because he was playing alone.
Would you, from what you're saying, there really isn't, in that part of the event that you're talking about, much dispute on the facts. Why is that a jury question as opposed to a question for the trial court to determine whether it's a duty?
Well, because we believe at that point there was a reasonable standard of care required, and we also, based on the judge's opinion, don't believe that he looked at those factors in the context that we have this on appeal.
So, and that goes to the gratuitous duty, is that right?
Yes, that's correct, Justice.
All right, what about, I know you also argue that it should be ordinary and reasonable care, but what if we decide that he's a licensee? What happens?
Pardon me?
That there's a different standard of care, maybe a higher standard or a lower standard of care, and that they have a duty to warn.
Well, we're thinking that,
as opposed to reasonable and ordinary.
I guess when you look at Keel versus Horner Lumber, which I believe to be kind of the standard of this, if you weigh Mrs. Silchek's actions in this case and you weigh the case of Horner Lumber, where they just loaded a couple bundles of wood onto a flatbed, and in that case, even though I know you dissented in that case, I think that if you're trying to be equitable in how the standard of care is decided in South Dakota, certainly based on Keel, Mrs. Silchek's gratuitous duty was far greater than Horner Lumber's.
Except that was involved a business.
It did.
Does that make a difference?
I don't believe so. I didn't find anything that believed it. In fact, we don't have any case law specifically on that, which is, I guess, why we're here. We also have a case, I think you just touched on a good point, where some of the facts and the law are intertwined in this case and really not delineated carefully. And this court said that when the facts or determinations are so intertwined with legal determinations, then the court has required full development and analysis of the case of those facts by a jury. That's another reason that we think this should have gone to a jury and not been taken away by a circuit judge. And in Vigo v. Gordon, the court was quite clear about that when you have intertwining facts.
Mr. Samp, I have a question. I don't know that I fully understand the distinction of the duties you're asking to be imposed here. I understand that you're asking for us to adopt a gratuitous duty.
Right.
But what do you call this other duty that you're arguing about, that you're arguing for? Are you suggesting that we not adopt the licensee distinction and just impose a general standard of care? Or what? Tell me precisely what the nature of this second legal duty is that you're arguing.
I'm sorry.
Tell me.
We're all getting older. I'm having a little bit trouble hearing your question.
Other than the gratuitous duty, I understand that. Tell me the nature and describe this other duty that you're arguing for. What's it called and precisely what's the nature of it?
Well, I think that our argument primarily is that Mrs. Silchek assumed a gratuitous duty when she went to check on the children and then failed to tell the Andruschenkovs that Dennis was playing alone, and that at least at that point that she owed a reasonable standard of care to Dennis.
So if I understand correctly, your whole case lives or dies on whether we adopt the gratuitous duty theory in this case. Would that be correct? Or
That's one theory, but another theory would be to look at the modern trend of cases toward the duty toward children and applying a reasonable standard of care. Whether they're in a, I think the cases in the other jurisdictions we cited, it doesn't matter whether a trespasser, a licensee, or an invitee toward children, there's still a reasonable standard of care. And the question would be, did Mrs. Silchek, in this instance, breach that standard of care?
You have 2 minutes, Mr. Sam.
Okay. We've briefed with detail the duties we believe that the plumber had that set the water temperature at 125 degrees when the code, and he knew that the water would scald at that level or above. That's in the record. We believe that
he set it at 120, but that there's a range?
No, he set it at 125. 120 is the code that at which the water heaters are supposed to be set by licensed plumbers, because they scald in 30 seconds above that. The variation can be 5 degrees up or down. Now, the water was at 160 degrees. How it got to that is another question. But even by failing to set it at 120, Dennis was going to get scalded in 30 seconds.
There was no evidence that you uncovered that anybody changed that water heater temperature after they installed it.
No, everybody denied it.
Okay.
It'd be a question of credibility of witnesses
What is your theory?
Pardon me?
What's your theory if this does go to the jury on how that got to 160 degrees?
Well, it would relieve if somebody else changed it. Let's say the Silcheks changed it, cranked it up. That would then relieve the contractor of a continuing tort. If we just take him at his word that he set it too high, then I believe on the City of Geddes case, you've got a continuing tort that you have to look at what occurred and when it occurred. I mean, in that case, it was 2 years before someone was harmed. What they would argue with the plumber is that it wasn't contemporaneous. The injury wasn't contemporaneous to the Dennis being injured, so that they have no liability. And
Mr. Silchek was interested in having his water. Matter of fact, he replaced an electric water heater with 2 gas water heaters.
Correct.
In order to have plenty of hot water. Is there any evidence that shows that either M&M or Metzger showed Mr. Silchek how to raise the water temperature on the heater?
There's conflicting testimony. The plumber said that he believes that he told Mrs. Silchek, as I recall his testimony, that the temperature could be raised by the knob.
Time has expired.
Thank you,
Mr. Sam. All right, Mr. Gary, you have 10 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, counsel, and faculty. It's my privilege to be here this morning on behalf of Ivan and Luba Silchek. Mr. and Mrs. Silchek came to the United States from the Ukraine several years ago and now make their home in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. The general issue here before the court is of course, one of duty. And very generally, does a social host have a legal duty to protect his social guest from injury? And more specifically, as it relates to this case, does a social host have a legal duty to protect a minor social guest, here a 3-year-old child, when that child's parents are present in the home?
Well, they do have a duty of some sort, don't they?
Certainly, Your Honor, they have a duty of what I would call ordinary care, but that is the trial court has found that the young Andruchenko boy was a licensee. And as a licensee, a social guest is a licensee. Therefore, the social guest takes the property as he or she finds it. And,
but they do have a duty to warn of known dangers.
They do have a duty to warn of known concealed dangers.
Okay.
Under as a licensee, that's the duty that is owed. But it's here, there certainly is no evidence to suggest that my clients, the Silchugs, knew that there was any danger posed by the hot water from this tap. They had lived in the home approximately 6 or 7 months. They had used that Whirlpool tub on several occasions, and there have, without any incident of being scalded by this hot water. So there's certainly no evidence to suggest that the Silchugs knew of any hazard posed by the hot water from this tap.
Didn't they know that Dennis was going around and turning on the faucets?
There, my client Luba did testify that before the incident where he was scalded, that on the main floor half bath, that he went in there and turned on the faucets, and some water had spilled out onto the floor.
So it'd be known that if he went upstairs and just turned on the hot faucet, there'd be trouble, wouldn't it?
Well, certainly, Your Honor. There, I mean, that knowing based on the fact that he had turned on water, and the only problem there was the only harm that was caused was probably to the floor. But keep in mind also that the Whirlpool tub is located in the master bath off the master bedroom. Luba Silchuk had gone up to put her 5-year-old down for a nap in the master bedroom. She'd closed the door to the master bedroom. She didn't lock it, but it was closed. So in order for this young Andruchenko boy to get at the Whirlpool tub, he had to go into the master bedroom, find his way into the master bath that was off the master bedroom, and there lies the Whirlpool tub. And I don't know what more a social host is supposed to do to protect a young child. But
well, it seems, though, just as common sense, if the temperature in this water coming out of the tap was 160 degrees, and was, which I understand everybody agrees would scald you severely. Doesn't it make common sense that they would have known that?
Your Honor, there is no evidence that they had any reason to believe that that water was any hotter than it was supposed to be. The evidence is that Ivan wanted hot water all the time, and that's why they requested that the single water heater be replaced by two water heaters.
Can you tell me what that means? I mean, the fact that they have two water heaters, what does that mean?
I think it's just capacity, Your Honor.
Doesn't make it any hotter.
Doesn't make it any hotter, no. And there's no evidence to suggest that either Ivan or Luba set the temperature controls. Once those temperature controls were set, they didn't, by one of the other defendants, there was no tampering.
Let's take these, I mean, assuming that we determine there is a duty here, and everybody's denying it, then doesn't that become a jury question on who set it too high or how it got that high?
Absolutely not. I don't think you have to get that far. This is a duty case, plain and simple. And I think it's simple under these facts because the duty here to protect this young boy lied with his parents. And
there's no duty on the part of the homeowners? Just because there's a duty, I concede there's a duty on the part of the parents, on the part of the parents of the child. But that doesn't eliminate somebody else's duty.
I think in this case, a social guest would be deemed as a licensee. And under our law, as upheld by this court on several occasions, a licensee, a homeowner owes a licensee a very minimal duty. And a licensee takes the property as he finds it. And except for there's a duty to warn of known concealed dangers.
You know, the South Dakota Code 20-9-1 says, and I'm paraphrasing, every person is responsible for the harm or injury done to another subject to the rules of contributory negligence. Now, that doesn't say anything about a licensee or anything like that. That says if they're responsible for the harm or injury to done to another subject to the rules of contributory negligence, they're responsible for it. So isn't that a jury question that the trial court just simply overlooked and by shielding that from the ruling on duty?
No, Your Honor, I don't think it is. And as this court has recognized on numerous occasions, the determination of a legal duty is a question of law. And a question of law can be properly determined by the trial court as it was in this case. And again, I go back to the duty here. The primary duty of supervision and responsibility for this young boy rested on the shoulders of his parents. They were right in that house when this incident occurred. And even though it occurred on another level of the house, these guests, the Andruchenkos, can't impose upon their social host the duty of supervision of that three-year-old.
Well, I understand, too, that the trial judge made a comment in his findings that this Dennis was behaving badly before this happened. Did his parents know that their child was misbehaving?
Yes, Your Honor. And, in fact, Luba Silchuk had asked Mrs. Andruchenko and warned her that, you know, if this continues, I'm going to have to hold you financially responsible for any damage he's done. He was ramming his little car into their wood floors.
Now, is that a disputed issue of fact, whether the parents knew that he was misbehaving, or do they concede that they knew that he had been doing that?
I believe it's undisputed, Your Honor. And they tried to calm the Silchuks down by saying, oh, don't worry, Dennis will be fine. Well, Dennis wasn't fine. We know that. And they can't impose their supervisory responsibilities upon the Silchuks when their young three-year-old, this rambunctious three-year-old, is upstairs unknown for maybe 20 minutes. And we all know
2 minutes.
What three-year-olds can do. Perhaps you as grandparents of grandchildren, you know what three-year-olds can, even the most ordinary things can present a danger to young children. And it's the responsibility of parents, the primary responsibility, to watch those children, particularly when they're in the home of the guest.
See, that seems to be the whole point that the trial court missed, that he got sidetracked by the fact that the parents are primarily responsible for the actions of the child. But that doesn't mean there's no other duty on the part of anybody else, a homeowner, as to the child. Under the law, the child cannot be contributory negligent at age 3, really, can you?
I would agree with that, Your Honor.
Okay. So then, under the circumstances subscribed by Mr. Samp, there can be a duty to a 3-year-old child on the part of several people. Like if somebody was going to take him for a walk or something, they would be responsible during that period of time, no matter whether the parents were sitting on their duff in the other room or not, wouldn't they?
If there is that transfer of responsibility or assumption of responsibility, that would certainly be true. But here that's not the case, Your Honor. And that's why the Andruchenko's argument on a gratuitous duty fails, too. There was no transfer or mutual agreement that the Silchuks would assume responsibility for the Andruchenko child. As a matter of fact, as pointed out in the deposition testimony of Mrs. Andruchenko, she acknowledged that she was the primary, she maintained primary responsibility for her son, and she admitted that.
Your time has expired, Mr. Hardy.
Could I ask one more question?
Sure.
This is a question that's been asked, I think, by Justice Meyer Henry, but I don't think you answered it. Isn't it common sense for the Silchuks under these circumstances to know that temperature of the hot water was somewhere in the neighborhood of 160 degrees?
Your Honor, I think common sense as it relates to hot water is one thing, but common sense as it relates to the temperature of that water is an entirely different matter. I mean, in my own home, I mean, it seems like the tap, the kitchen is hotter than the tap in the shower, for example, and I've never tested it, but I don't know that common sense
would play a role here.
But if you live in a house for 7 months and you go use that whirlpool or spa or whatever it is, you know enough after a certain period of time not to turn the hot water on first without turning on the cold. And common sense tells me that they would have known just how hot that water was, or at least that it was a greater degree than safety would provide.
You may be right, Your Honor, on a common sense basis, but as it relates to this case, then as a licensee, did they have a duty to warn of that? And I don't think under these circumstances that was a concealed dangerous condition known to the Silchuks that required any warning.
Thank you, Mr. Geary.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Wise, you have 5 minutes, sir.
Please, the court. After listening to these arguments, I'm not sure how they affect my client. I represent the builder. I would only ask you, at what point did the duty arise? At what point was it negligent? Is it 150 degrees? Is it 130 degrees? Is it 210 degrees, which is what you find in the Uniform Plumbing Code? That is cited by the plaintiff's attorneys. And the judge in this case did take into consideration that 2000 Uniform Plumbing Code.
That was the plumbing code adopted by the city of Sioux Falls at the time of this accident?
Correct. And despite my objections to it, for two reasons. One, I didn't follow the case law on establishing that was, in fact, the code that was adopted by the city of Sioux Falls and was in place at the time. Nor did they follow the simplified method that's provided for in the statute. Nevertheless, the judge said, based upon the affidavit of the city official, he would take into consideration that code. And specifically, there's a section in that code that deals with controls on water heaters. And it says specifically that there must be controls on water heaters that control the temperature to a maximum of 210 degrees. So where did my client do anything wrong? Where does my client's duty begin and end? He no longer had possession or control of the residence once he sold it. Is he supposed to come back every 30 days, every 6 months, every year, and say, I may have some exposure here. I want to check the temperature gauges to make sure that you're not over a certain standard. And what is that standard?
Well, did your client install the water heaters?
No, he did not. He hired the plumber.
All right, but my question, though, is did he was he the general contractor that put in the two new gas heaters that Mr. Andrushenko wanted?
Let me clarify that first. When they put it in, the homeowner wanted to make sure that he had adequate hot water. And they hooked up, at the beginning, an electric and a gas water heater in series. So, Justice Meyer-Henry, you're right. It doesn't change the temperature of the water. It merely allowed for more capacity for hot water. Later, he said he wasn't happy with that setup, and he wanted two gas water heaters. So my client hired the plumber to come in and put in two new gas water heaters. Now, when the plumber came in and installed them, he used the manual that was available. And what's significant about that is...
Now, did that manual come into evidence?
That's what's really good about this, Judge. There is no evidence that the manual that they produced, that the judge did not allow in, by the way, was, in fact, the manual that was in use at the time. In fact, if you look at the plumber's deposition testimony, he specifically said when Mr. Samp asked him about that manual, that wasn't the manual that he remembered. And, in fact, he specifically said, looking at the manual and the controls that they have in that manual that you're showing to me does not match my recollection of what those controls look like at the time I installed these water heaters. So the judge was absolutely right in rejecting those manuals. So then you get to the point, what was the negligence What was the duty of my client? There is no one, there is no evidence, no one testified, no one came forward with a statute, a regulation, an industry standard that said above this level in a residence, it's negligent for you to install this water heater.
Were there any warnings on the hot water heaters themselves?
I think the plumber testified that that would have been standard practice. He couldn't specifically remember. But certainly there was nothing offered. I think there were some allegations, but no support in the record to support the plaintiff's claim that there was no warnings. And so I don't know that you can speculate here now and assume some responsibility on my client's part. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Weiss.
Thank you.
Mr. O'Leary, you have 5 minutes, sir.
Mr. Chief Justice, Justices, Counsel, may it please the Court. I think as lawyers we can take a great professional pride in Mr. Samp's advocacy and his passion for this point. But nonetheless, a legal duty does not hide behind a closed door.
He'd probably be happier with a verdict, didn't he?
He may, Your Honor. The fact of the matter is a legal duty has to be established, and Judge Teedy in this case got it completely right. As it relates to M&M Plumbing, there was no special relationship between the plumber and the plaintiff in this case. There's no evidence of a violation of a statute or a building code. There's no evidence by way of expert testimony that a standard of care in the installation of these water heaters was somehow violated. I might note for the court that from the date of this accident until February of this year when this case was dismissed, the plaintiff had almost 5 years to come up with some expert testimony to support their theories, 5 years to come up with admissible evidence with respect to codes, statutes, or some other test that would properly apply, and did not do that. The question becomes, is it foreseeable that a person can be scalded by hot water? Of course, the questions of this court this morning acknowledge that. But yet, even though that is foreseeable, there has to be something else. There has to be the foreseeability as the touchstone of the duty. And here, there's no duty to this social guest by the plumber. Let me touch on intervening and superseding cause, because this may be of interest to this court. It seems to me that there's two issues. First of all, if there's been an intervening and superseding cause, there must be some relationship to the party. The only relationship that we will find here is the relationship between the parents and their child. Then there must be a foreseeable risk of harm. Was it foreseeable for the parents in that special relationship to recognize that if they didn't properly supervise this child, that he could be hurt? And the absolute uncontroverted answer to that question is yes, not only based upon the circumstances occurring in the Silchuk home that day, but presumably these parents knew that they had a three-year-old that was truly a three-year-old. He needed special watching. Did M&M have a duty to protect this child from the parents' failure to supervise? Absolutely not. So even if this court, under all of this questionable argument on what the admissible evidence is, would somehow find a duty existed between the plumber and the child, seven months after installation, there's been a superseding an intervening cause, and that was the parents' failure to supervise this child on that particular day.
The superseding cause could also be the Silchuk's knowledge that the temperature in that could run up to 160 degrees, right?
I don't know that they knew what the temperature...
No, I know, I'm not saying whether they knew or not, but if they knew, that could also be a superseding cause.
Only, Your Honor, I think if the Silchuk's recognized that the water was too hot, and there's no evidence of that. There was never a complaint back to the plumber or to the general contractor that they felt the water system was too hot.
In matter of fact, Mr. Silchuk wanted it hot.
He wanted hot water.
Right.
He wanted hot water. And certainly no one would suggest that the homeowners have to turn their water temperature down because they may have a social guest over for lunch that doesn't like hot water. And that goes to Mr. Gary's comments, of course, about the duty to social guests.
But aren't those all questions of fact for the jury if there's a superseding cause?
I don't believe so, Justice Meyer Henry, because I think that's a question of legal duty. I think that's a question of legal duty that Judge Teague properly answered and this court should affirm.
I mean, it isn't just hot water we're talking about here, because once we say there's a duty, a three-year-old can stick something into an electrical socket or get under the sink and open a can of Drano or try to get into some of the medicine cabinet. I mean, once we touch on this duty that the host suddenly or now have an obligation that maybe overrides the parent's obligation, where do we stop with this obligation?
As my colleague, Mr. Wise, so well argued, where would we place the limits of this duty once this door is opened?
It's not just hot water that's dangerous to a three-year-old. Anyone who's had a three-year-old knows that there's a lot of things in a house that's dangerous to them.
Stairs, chairs, anything. Which is why the issue, I think, in counsel's mind is that really this is a regrettable situation, a regrettable accident that fundamentally lied at the feet of the parents.
Your time has expired, Mr. O'Leary. Thank you.
Thank you, Justice.
Mr. Samp, you have 10 minutes, sir. Mr. Samp, would you want to take your orange juice up with you? Okay.
Well, let me just, maybe I shouldn't have asked him, I should ask you this question. You know, where do we stop with this obligation? Because we all know that three-year-olds are extremely curious creatures, and they're into everything. They're climbing, they're looking, they're sticking things in their mouths, they're sticking... You know, we have all kinds of protections for children, childproof caps and caps for electrical lights. I mean, where do we stop once we say, in your case, well, they should have been protected from the hot water?
That's an excellent question, because if the parents had all been downstairs and Dennis would have got into this injury on his own, I don't think we'd be here. The real issue is that Mrs. Silchuk goes upstairs. She's already concerned about what Dennis might do toward her infant. She's the last person to see him, and she knows that he might get into trouble, but she doesn't warn the parents that Dennis is playing alone. So that's where I think that the court may want to look at this strict definition of invitee versus licensee versus trespasser. And, you know, even a trespasser gets a ordinary care, but we'd submit that in Dennis's case, he was an invitee, and he should at least have had reasonable care, and that it wasn't reasonable for somebody that knew that this three-year-old was playing alone, that he was already going through the terrific threes, that she didn't come and warn the parents and say, you've got to bring Dennis downstairs. I'm afraid he's going to get in trouble. Or do anything. Didn't even tell them. So they just continued with their social affair. In hindsight, then they argue, well, we didn't have any duty to do anything. So I think that is exactly on point. I did want to cover a little bit what the contractor could have done. First of all, the plumber in the deposition testified that he could have put in a mixing valve into this tandem of two water heaters. But he wasn't asked to do it, so he didn't do it. Now that so two things happened here that I do believe have some liability with the builder. One, there's no evidence that the builder checked the temperature of the water to see if it was above code, 120 degrees. The plumber testified that he'd already set it at 125 degrees. So
now, Mr. Wise was saying code's 210, and you're telling us code's 120?
The code that went into the record said 120 degrees was the proper setting for a water heater.
Was that the City of Sioux Falls code?
City of Sioux Falls code.
But wasn't Ron, that a later code?
Pardon?
Wasn't that a code that was introduced after 2000?
It was based on Ron Bell's affidavit as to what the water temperature should have been at the time.
My understanding, though, that was a code that went into effect after this incident and after the installation of the water heater.
Okay. We believe that the affidavit of Ron Bell was correct. The, you know, 160 degrees is really hot, and the judge acknowledges that the water was hot just based on all the testimony. But at 125 degrees, based on the plumber's testimony, water will scald an infant in 30 seconds. And not warning somebody of that, he didn't warn the builder, apparently. He doesn't know if he warned the Silchiks or not. And there was no labeling on the water heater as to warning. In fact, the manuals leave that to the plumber or the installer to decide that. And under the building permit laws, the builder has an obligation as well as the plumber to make sure that the building code is followed. So we do believe that the builder had some obligation here, the degree of which we believe would be a jury question. There's also a chain of cases in the briefs of the Silchiks that are a bit troublesome, and I think do draw a bright line between South Dakota cases and this case. In all the cases cited, and I won't recite those for you in a short time, but in all those eight cases that are cited, in every case, the parents were in proximity to the child. And in their brief, they say Dennis was playing a few feet away. He wasn't playing a few feet away. He was playing alone on the second floor. So that's where this duty, I think, switches when Mrs. Silchik knew, in fact, that Dennis was playing alone, but didn't tell the parents or alert them so that they could avert something like happened here.
Does the code require a mixer to be installed?
No, but it does prevent scalding.
Does a mixer prevent when you turn the nozzle? Is there two? Are there two nozzles here or two handles?
Correct.
Okay, so yeah, one is hot, one is cold.
And the fact situation here, Judge, is really kind of different because the hot water nozzle was one place and the cold water was a bit further away, so you could just hit the... It wasn't like the motels we were at last night where everything is together.
All right. And a mixer would... If you just turned on the hot and you had a mixer, then it would mix the cold in to prevent the temperature from going over a certain point.
Right. And that's only required for commercial installations, such as a nursing home. We've had cases of scalding in a nursing home, for example. The reason you can't scald yourself in a nursing home or hotel is because there's a mixing valve there. And with the idea that Mr. Silchik wanted really hot water and didn't ask for a mixing valve, that the designer contractor didn't suggest a mixing valve, and that the plumber didn't say, hey, if you don't put a mixing valve in, you know, this could really get hot. I mean, 160 degree water is really, really hot. So all we're saying is that there was a way to prevent this injury to a three-year-old child. And also, how did the Andrew Shankos have any idea that this was different than any other American home that they had been in and that somebody was going to have water that hot? It could only come about by the fact that Mr. Silchik asked for two hot water heaters and somehow had them cranked up to a point that we had scalding water. It couldn't have occurred otherwise.
Do you concede that the two hot water heaters relate only to capacity rather than to the temperature of the water?
Well, it assures that there's going to be maximum hot water. The two assures that there's going to be maximum hot water at all times. I think the plumber testified to that, and I believe that Mr. O'Leary also alluded to that. So at all times, you're going to turn that tap on, you are going to have 125 degree or more water. In fact, the plumber said it could vary 5 degrees. So at 130 degrees, you're gonna scald somebody in like 23 seconds instead of 30 seconds.
2 minutes, counsel.
Thank you, Judge. We believe that under SDCL 29.1 that everybody takes on some responsibility toward children in South Dakota, that the division of licensee, trespasser, invitee was applied far too strict by this trial court, and that we needed to look at the duty of reasonable care toward children, given all the facts in this case, and not just chop it off with the idea because they were a licensee, there was no further obligation. So on that basis, the court, we know that summary judgment is a severe remedy. I think it's very severe in this case, given all the facts and law. We would stand on our briefs, and we'd ask that Dennis Andrushenkov be afforded the opportunity to have his claim heard by a jury. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sam. The court will be in recess for 10 minutes.